Welcome to part two of our conversation with Cale Epperson about ghosts versus spirits.
Yeah, this is one it's rare, but I haven't heard of this theory before, and I'm intrigued. So in your opinion, because obviously, as you stated before, and as we all know, this is all opinion based, and that's the world we live in here when we're talking about the ghosts and spirits. What separates the two? What makes one a spirit be able to be up with the times? They can tell you what the latest iPhone model is and recline the chair. And then what makes a ghost be stuck in the same place where they died, yet they can still communicate with the living the same way a spirit could?
Yeah, that's the weird part about it. It's something we just don't know.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing with theories and opinions in the paranormal, because they change all the time. And I always tell people, even though I say something today, tomorrow it may be totally different, because I may discover something different.
Sure.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But I don't know. It just seems like, maybe it's the traumatic event with a ghost dying. Maybe when that individual died unexpectedly or before their time. I don't know. Maybe that has something to do with it. A lot of ghosts are attached to something, either an item or a building, and like rare occasions, a person. I don't know. It's hard to understand why. I watched the documentary on a ghost that was attached to a chair, and that was the only reason why they were here. And the investigators were telling the ghost, "Well, we can watch the chair for you if you want us to, but you don't have to stay around." And then, like, once they convinced the ghost that the chair was going to be okay, the activity stopped. And I'm thinking to myself, what a horrible way to be stuck in limbo because you're worried about a chair.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's a consciousness thing. People, even in life, people's priorities are set weird. If you're so fascinated by, a 66 Mustang, and maybe your ghost is hanging around because you're so concerned about an automobile, maybe it's a conscious thing, I don't know. That's what makes it a theory.
Yeah,
you're trying to figure out why.
The one thing that I do to try and understand this is, or the one thing I can reference that I feel puts some light on this. Sometimes it goes to the world of dreaming, and I'll have dreams sometimes. The quintessential one that many of us have is getting our locker open in high school. I have one sometimes where I will be in a radio station and I can't get the CD players to work. This is harkening back to the days of playing CDs. So, like, I'm in a different place in time in this dream. And in reality, this could happen sometimes where, like, you have two CD players, one of them dies and you're live on the air and you have no choice but to try and figure out how to make this thing work. And I will get stuck in a dream like that sometimes for the entire night. It'll go on hours. I'll check the clock. It'll be midnight. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And it's still the same damn thing. And for 6, 7 hours, I will be stuck in this mindset of I'm trying to get this CD player to work, and it's maddening. And I'll eventually wake up and get up and I'll know, oh God, that was a different place in time. And really nothing that extreme ever happened to me where it was that bad of a nightmare, or I would have certainly found a solution rather than trying the same thing over and over and over that was not working. But it makes you wonder if when you have a spirit that seems to be fixated on an object or fixated on a position or a person or something, that almost is the definition of insanity, that's not going to be changed and can't be changed. If they're stuck in a state like that, I don't want to say they're stuck in a dreamlike state, but they're stuck in a mental state that's similar to that dreamlike state of just being completely oblivious to anything other than the task that they are focused on at that time. And there's some way that they're not able to snap out of it. But sometimes the human intervention seems to be able to snap them out of it. But like the mind just gets set on repeat. So I can understand how that happens to the living in a dream. I'm wondering if that's what happens sometimes to the dead when they've moved to the other side, but they're just kind of stuck. And then we're sitting here going, why are they doing this over and over?
And I've had situations. There was a case. There's a business out here. It used to be the old County Line Barbecue, but I think it's Gabriella's now. But that's like a very haunted restaurant in Oklahoma. And during the investigation, we picked up screaming. And one of the claims from the employees is that they'll hear screaming coming from the basement area. And, you know, my first thought is when it's probably high EMF or something affecting them. But on several different investigations, we have picked up screaming on audio. And we did find out, the owner did research. Back in Prohibition times, this restaurant happened to sit off a set of Route 66. And this particular location, what used to be a... not really a bar, but it was like a swing easy or a place where people would go and drink where they're not supposed to go drinking and gambling and stuff. And when you actually walk into the restaurant itself, you got an open area, but on the sides, it looks like little bitty individual rooms. Well, those rooms used to be where you go and play poker.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually found documentation that when it was a swing easy, that a waitress got murdered in the basement. Her husband thought she was cheating, and while she was in the wine cellar down in the basement, he decapitated her and killed her. So the screaming that we're getting is her. And I don't know if it's a residual scream just because it was so, you know, the incident was so horrible, but we actually can communicate with her. Her name is Margaret. And she will communicate with our K2 meters and through EVPs and stuff. And it's like, okay, is this residual or is she just reliving this horrific event? And that particular location, I always loved investigating there. It's got an intelligent haunting of a man named Russell. He used to be the doorman. And when they did a police raid there, he got killed. Some say he got killed at the front door. Some say he got killed by the bar, but, most of the stories point towards he was killed by the front, got shot at the front door. And Russell knows he's dead. He communicates with us. If we set up a table to play poker, if we have a ghost meter out, we can ask Russell, do you want a card? And he'll set that ghost meter off and we'll lay a card down for him. And it's amazing. And most of the time, I don't like asking ghosts if you're dead, because sometimes you may get a rough response because they may not know they're dead. And of course, how would you feel if somebody told you, hey, did you know you're dead? That would be very overwhelming to anybody. But Russell knows he's dead. I mean, he'll flat... I forgot what question we asked him, but he responded back of saying that he knew that he was dead. And he was just happy being where he was at. And that's such a cool location. That on their security cameras, they get stuff that happens overnight, objects moving, shadows. I've gotten apparition photos out of there before. It's an amazing location. So, yeah, I think a lot of... Again, sorry for rambling. I just do that.
No, you're good.
But yeah, I think it's something with the consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, it's just, I think they're just kind of fixated on the moment.
Yeah. And it's something that we can do in the living realm too. And sometimes somebody needs to snap us out of it. So I guess that makes it not such a far stretch to me when we're talking about what sometimes one would just assume is a residual haunting or something of that nature. I don't know that all residual hauntings are just that simple to explain. I think sometimes there's more to it. And sometimes, you know, some are and some are not, but they can look the same on the surface until you dig down a little bit deeper. I want to go back to the area that you talked about towards the beginning, because I'm always been fascinated by this, and that is the haunted shopping center, the haunted shopping mall. I have been drawn, I don't know why, for years, you know, to the idea of, I mean, we're in this world now where so many of the shopping centers that we grew up around in the 80s and 90s and had such reverence for, they have the beautiful Christmas displays and Santa would be there. And it's just filled with people and fun. And it was the place to be. Today, so many shopping centers and malls, they're vacant, they're empty. They look like something out of a horror movie. Many could very easily be and have been used for sets of horror movies because they're decrepit and falling apart, and they're no longer those places of energy and excitement. Do you think when it comes to locations like a mall that is in disrepair, is falling apart, is shut down, but its shell is still there and you can still see, you know, the remnants of what once was. Is there even though for the most part, you don't have a lot of deaths in malls other than maybe a mall walker had a heart attack or something of that nature. I mean, natural causes do tend to happen with people. But, you know, the cases of violence are few and far between. Do you feel that areas like that are going to have more energy than areas that say didn't really have a whole lot of human energy or interaction in their life, just, you know, an open field or you know, a warehouse that is now closed but really didn't get used all that much?
I do believe in what they call free roaming ghosts. Mm-hmm. Ghosts that are not bound to any location. I've had like home cases where somebody's house has never been haunted, and they're, for some freak reason, it's got some entity that's plaguing them, and then it's only short lived. We go and do our investigation, and they're not even tied to the location. And the past location I was talking about, we made contact with a spirit of a girl that wasn't even attached to this old restaurant. She apparently died on I-35 and she was going to Tulsa. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why are you here? And apparently whatever location she died at wasn't even close to this location. And so it's like, did her spirit just happen to be in this area at this certain time? Mm-hmm. As long as I've been working at malls, I've been working at malls over 20 years and I've seen paranormal activity at malls, and a lot of it really doesn't make sense. The only thing I can figure out why they're there is either A, that if it is a mall and it's busy, maybe they're feeding off the energy of the people there. But with any business, you know, you got electrical rooms, all this EMF and all these different types of energies. Maybe that's why they're there. Or maybe it's just something in their past they remember, and that's why they go there. I think a lot of it has to be based on energy.
Yeah.
I mean, ghosts have to have energy to survive. And the location I work at, there's several ghosts that haunt there. And they have nothing to do with the location whatsoever. They're just, we don't even know why they're there. Once of a little boy, on rare occasions, when I first started working there, I'd always get this call about a lost little boy. And I'd be like, okay, what's he look like? Well, he's got a chili bowl haircut and he's wearing overalls. And I started noticing, like, the first time I got this call, we go and look for the kid. And it's like, okay, I can't find no little kid with overalls on. But it continued. And I was like, they'd either describe him as he was either white or Native American. But it was always the chili bowl style haircut and the overalls. And I decided one night to actually whip out a recorder, and I actually got his voice on the recorder. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why he's there. There's no reason for him to be there. but maybe it's just that the energy there is the only thing I can think of.
Do you think sometimes spirits choose places like a mall? And I'm talking about an active mall, one that is still in business and still has people coming and going, to haunt versus a less trafficked location because of all the energy, because of all the people coming and going, because they can blend in easier and it gives them a little bit closer slice of what life was once like and it kind of makes them feel more normal, if you will, as opposed to the reality of them being dead?
I think so. I went on cases where the spirits like to intermingle with people, mm-hmm. especially when they, like, I can go to a location, the ghosts love us coming there. They love talking to us. They love communicating with us. But I've been on cases where ghosts just want to be left alone. You know, you always hear about people getting EVPs of get out of here, leave, or they're making threats. They just want to be left alone. I think it's based on that individual ghost of how they feel. If they weren't a people person, they're probably going to hang out somewhere where they're distant from somebody. But if they're hanging around a mall or something, or a Walmart or something, I think it's because of the people and the interactions. I think it was Sylvia Brown when she was alive. She was a psychic medium, mm-hmm. and she investigated a case at an old Toys R Us.
I remember that episode of Unsolved Mysteries.
Yes. And the spirit had nothing to do with the store itself.
No.
But I found that that was an interesting case that the spirit and ghost would hang around this toy store.
It was like Yanni something, wasn't it? I can't think of the name. It was like Yanni Yogurtson or something of that nature.
Yeah, it's been a while. And I remember they had an apparition photo of him. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Because you see all these employees and Sylvia Brown kind of sitting in a circle and this apparition is just standing there in the background. And I just thought that was just amazing of how she picked up on that.
Yeah.
And like I said, he didn't die there. He lived before that business was even open.
Yeah.
Or probably even thought of.
Well, I believe the story, and that goes back to, and I don't know how confirmed it is or not, of there being a farm there before the Toys R Us existed, and now obviously doesn't exist. It's probably a Halloween Express these days. But it was something where it was like a love triangle or something of that nature where there was jealousy. He died or killed himself. Again, it's been so many years, but it was the land. It was the events that took place on that land. And regardless of what goes on the land, his spirit was still there. And that's what they were picking up on. One more interesting question. This is, again, it's all opinion, but the empty malls and empty schools, two places that just, I think, to even the non-sensitive individual could walk through and get kind of an eerie vibe about. And I don't know if it's simply just the simple psychological elements of it, of our mind is telling us, where are all the people? Where are all the people? Almost like a danger, like a fight or flight thing. Like if there's nobody here, there's something wrong. Because we've been so trained to know that malls should be busy. Schools should be teeming with kids. But when you walk through one, when it's, you know, closed down or out of service or out of season or what have you, it can be a very eerie place to be. And you may have no stories of ghosts or anything even at that specific location. Do you think that when you're getting feelings like that, that it is simply just human psychology and just our fight or flight and our mind warning us that something doesn't seem right here? Or do you think sometimes that we are, in fact, picking up on energy that exists in these locations, but we are not seeing it or hearing it, but we are, in fact, feeling it because these places have been packed with more people than most locations ever will have been in the course of their active lifetimes, and that energy still resides within the structures themselves?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, human beings are no different from animals, with a sense of sensing the environment around us. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like you're in danger, your body has senses to pick up on that stuff. And we use those same senses when you go out on an investigation case to tell if there's something in the room or not.
Sure.
I don't know if you ever knew Peter James. He was a psychic medium. He was like my inspiration to get into the paranormal field. I always love reading his stuff and watching his videos and stuff. And he would tell people, everybody's got this ability. And he could walk into a room and he could tell if somebody was in there. And the easiest way I can explain it, if I go into a room and I feel like there's a lot of tension, mm-hmm. like you get that feeling like somebody doesn't want me here. I tell my investigators, like, have you ever been up on an aggressive person who is mad and you feel that tension coming off that person? It's the same way with a ghost. If that ghost is mad or he's upset, you feel that same tension. It's that energy is still there. Mm-hmm. Your body is picking up on that. And it's just teaching yourself to tune in with your senses. One of my theories is, like, if I know I'm dealing with a good ghost, if they're drawing energy from me and it's really, really cold and there's no reason for it to be cold, that's usually a sign for me, like, okay, the ghost I'm dealing with is more likely a good person. Now, if I get into a room, for say it's freezing cold outside, I'm at an abandoned location and I walk into a room and it's hot or humid, the air's thick, then I know I'm either dealing with an angry or upset ghost or a spirit that, or a ghost that doesn't want me there, or possibly something demonic. Because the heat may rise. I always notice, though, if I'm near anything negative, it feels like, whew, getting hot in here. It's getting stuffy, or I'm getting overly warm for some reason. I think any investigator should play off their senses, but any good paranormal investigator, they need to debunk too. Besides going off senses, there's always different types of paranormal teams. One, you got like a spiritual group that's nothing but psychics and mediums. They feel around, feel all the energies. And a lot of times some of these psychics and mediums, not talking bad about psychics and mediums, so no one get mad at me.
Sure.
But some spiritual teams just take it to the extreme where they don't debunk. They assume everything's a ghost, every little knock, any little noise. Now, I'm not saying every psychic medium team's like that or spiritual team is like that, so no one get mad at me. But sometimes when they're too far spiritual for a ghost hunter team, it can throw everything off. But you got like full scientific teams. They debunk everything, but they don't look into the spiritual side of it. You know, they can go into your house and say, yeah, you got something. No, you don't. Or we found something. No, we didn't. But when that client says, well, what do I need to do to cleanse the location or anything like that? Well, a scientific team always has to contact a minister or someone to come in and do that, because that's not their thing. They're there just to say, yes, there's something here, or no, there's not. Mm-hmm. My team, Paranormal Investigation of Oklahoma, we're a balance between the spirituality and the scientific side. So if I go into somebody's house, if it's not haunted, I'm going to tell you, there's nothing here.
Sure.
And I've made clients mad before. I know there's something here. Well, unfortunately, during our investigation, we didn't get anything. You know, maybe it's just hit and miss and we just came on a wrong night. We can always reschedule and try to do another investigation and see what we get. But with being on the spiritual side of it, if we do an investigation and the client wants their location cleansed or blessed, then I have team members that can do that. My paranormal team has always been called the most most universal team or the most spiritual team, or we're very open-minded when it comes with spirituality. We were called the most diverse paranormal team in the United States of America, and it's because, like, I'm ordained and I'm more Christian based. My head clergy on my team is a mixture of Christianity and paganism. I've had pagan ministers on my team, somebody that was Buddhist at one time. I even had a Luciferian at one time, and we all work great together. Rarely we step on each other's toes. We may go into someone's house, and I believe everything is faith driven. So if I go into somebody's house and they're not Christian based and we're trying to get rid of something negative in their house, it's probably not going to work if their faith's not into it. So if that person is pagan, they're more likely going to have the faith to use their own spirituality or their faith belief to drive out whatever's in the house. Mm-hmm. And the same way with Christianity, you know, if they're Christian based, I'm not going to go in with a pagan belief or something they don't believe to get rid of anything, because it's just not going to work.
Sure.
And it's just because they don't believe in it. And again, it kind of goes back to all religions tap into the paranormal one way or another. It's, I believe when you're dealing with good and positive energies, it's what you believe as the individual. So, and we get a lot of cases just because we're so open, very open-minded, and people, like, a lot of times they like us for being honest. I can go in and say, they'll make some claims, we'll do an interview, and I'll tell them, like, well, the noise is coming from your plumbing, or there's a lot of high EMF. You may want to have an electrician come in and check. Mm-hmm. I had one case, it was in Yukon, and a father called because his child kept seeing a ghost and it was scaring him. And this was happening every night. And he was kind of confused. He's like, this is a brand new house. Why is my kid seeing anything? And we came over and we did an interview. And here's a family. He's in the military. And they don't collect antiques. They don't bring it. They don't go to, like, Goodwill or thrift stores, or they don't bring anything into the house that doesn't need to be there. And they're very strong with their religious beliefs. And he really didn't believe in ghosts, but he thought, you know, he was getting concerned because this kid was seeing something.
Sure.
So we walk around the house with an EMF meter, and we end up discovering there's a high electromagnetic field in this kid's bedroom because the computer Wi-Fi system was next to his bed. So the kid was hallucinating. It was basically all it was. And so we recommended to him, just move your router, put it in a different location. Or if you can't move the router, maybe move his bed to the opposite side of the room. Mm-hmm. That will more likely help. And so I think what they did, they moved the bed to the opposite side, and no more activity. He didn't see any more ghosts. He didn't hear things anymore. And it was just because of something logical, you know, just EMF.
Sure.
And you'd be surprised what EMF can do to a person's brain. So
that wraps up part two of our conversation with Cale Epperson about ghosts versus spirits. A big thank you to you for joining us on today's program and supporting the show and keeping us on the air. We could not do this thing without you. Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.